Blog Talk Radio.
Family, this is Leslie Gist. You listen to the Just of Freedom blog show. Tonight we have a very special guest. Her name is Dot. Dot, are you on the line? Hello, Dot. Can you hear me now?
I can hear you now, yes.
Great. Can you introduce yourself to the Blog Talk family?
Yes, I'm Dot Wilsey. I live in Peterborough near the Garrett Smith Estate National Historic Landmark. And I am the president of the Cabinet of Freedom for the National Abolition Hall of Fame and Museum.
Great. Can you explain to our listeners what the National Hall of Fame for Abolitionists is about?
Yes, I would be glad to do that. The National Abolition Hall of Fame and Museum, called NAHOF for short, honors anti-slavery abolitionists, their work to end slavery and the legacy of that struggle, and strives to complete the second and ongoing abolition, the moral conviction to end racism. And NAHOF began with a meeting of about 20 people from the Northeast in October of 2004 to consider the feasibility of having a Hall of Fame in Peterborough. And the reason that Tiny Peterborough was looking at that was that the power of the great abolitionist Garrett Smith and also the first meeting of the New York State Anti-Slavery Society happened in Peterborough on October 22, 1835, and we will be celebrating our 175th anniversary of that meeting this coming October. And we had begun with the idea of kind of a society that met occasionally, and the people that came together, scholars, abolition scholars, people in the field, and so on, felt that we needed to provide a Hall of Fame as well as an abolition museum. And in 2007, we were chartered by the New York State Education Department as a Hall of Fame and museum, and we've moved on from there.
Why are abolitionists so important to you?
Well, when I moved to Peterborough about 30 years ago, I began to learn about Garrett Smith. And when in my working years, I did a lot of reading and research and so on, but not to the extent of when I retired. And the example of Garrett Smith and his belief that in cultural diversity and acceptance of people became stronger and stronger. And as I learned the history, I began to admire and want to bring to the public the story of the people that took great risks for other people and for themselves to escape slavery in the 19th century. I'm not as articulate in that field. I'm more of a facilitator, not a historian. So my role has been to bring historians and community people together and grow up a project in a town, a township that has only 1,200 people in a tiny hamlet that has only 200 people. And in that time, in the last actually 2 decades, we have placed 2 of our sites on the 24 sites of the Underground Railroad Heritage Trail in New York State, and 1 site on the Network to Freedom, of which the Gist of Freedom is also. And so we have come quite a way to begin to tell the story of the importance of Peterborough and the message that it has for today.
Now, there's an exciting campaign going on with your organization. You want to talk a little bit about that?
Yes, there is. Now, through the years, we have inducted 11 people, and I'm taking the long way around this, Leslie, but we induct on 1 year and commemorate those inductees the next year, because we don't want to be a factory of names. We want to try to take time to teach the public. So we have been able to grow our Hall of Fame, but our museum is still not, has still not been actualized. And although the town of Peterborough has given us the top floor of the site of the first New York State Anti-Slavery Society meeting, we do not have an abolition museum there as of yet. So we were able to, for June, get into the Pepsi campaign, the Pepsi Foundation, for $250,000, $250,000, to put an elevator into the building and to actualize our dream of the Abolition Museum, which will be an interactive 10-module explanation of American abolition from colonial period to the Civil War. And the way that we would get that $250,000 if we had the most people vote for the project online with a Refresh Everything Pepsi campaign. So we'd like to take every opportunity to ask people not only to vote once, but vote every day for the rest of June. We have come up 100, we came up 170 ranks within the first week and a half, and now, and then we got stuck at the 82nd position, and now we've started going down. So we would really like to rally those people that were so faithful to us that first week and ask them to vote this last week and get one other person at least to vote. And we think we can ramp it back up to be number 1 or 2 and get that $250,000 to make a difference.
Well, I think you guys are doing a great job in Peterborough. And to get people more excited about what you're doing, explain to everyone what Gerrit Smith did for black people.
Well, Gerrit Smith was the wealthiest landowner in New York State and believed that his wealth was a divine gift that he should give to people who were less fortunate than him, to the oppressed. And he gave a great deal of money to the cause of abolition. And he was criticized by some because he did not give big amounts of money to large organizations. He wanted to give it directly to help people directly. So he would buy the freedom of slaves, families, and give them passage or have them escorted to Peterborough and then on to Canada. He gave to Frederick Douglass. Most of the support for Frederick Douglass' papers was from Gerrit Smith. He also was the primary of the Secret Six who supported John Brown's raid on Harper's Ferry. Harriet Tubman came through Peterborough often. Sojourner Truth was here several times. As the New York State Office of Parks and Recreation and Historic Preservation nomination for the National Network to Freedom, I'm sorry, to the National Historic Landmark nomination said that his home read like a who's who's list of important people in history at that time. So his latest biography is called Practical Dreamer because he really had a dream of how things should be, and he tried practical things to make it happen.
Now, what happened in your life as a youth that you can reflect back on that you think would get you involved with something like this today?
I'm not sure of that.
Is there any hints, clues?
I don't know. I'd have to look at that. But perhaps my closest, what embraced me to Smith first was his daughter, Elizabeth Smith Miller, who is credited with designing the first bloomers, which became a symbol of the women's rights movement in the mid-19th century. And I was a woman who had been battered in an early marriage. And when I came to Peterborough and learned about the women's movement and so on, because Elizabeth Cady spent her summers here and met Henry Stanton here, we used that history to start telling the needs of especially women who are victims of domestic violence. And that was when I started using history to try to ground the idea of what we need to do today. So we made bloomers and we wore bloomers and we talked about the needs to have programs for domestic violence. And that was before there were programs in our county. That doesn't answer your question directly, but that was my first, like, using heritage for activism of today.
Mm-hmm. That answers the question. You didn't go back to childhood, but you made a connection of something that happened to you personally.
Well, I was always considered the person who stuck up for the underdog, and as a student leader, I was recognized as that person. I wanted things to be fair. I thought the world should be fair. It was hard to find out it really wasn't, you know, to move on from there.
Wonderful. Last personal question. Do you have a religious background? Were you raised in a religious home?
I was raised in a faith home, but not religious necessarily.
Mm-hmm.
And then I, upon moving to Peterborough, I was fortunate to come into a Christian community that fed me very well at that time.
Okay. I know you have a lot of things going on in your different organizations. Do you want to talk about the next thing on your agenda that we mentioned?
Sure. Leslie, there's one thing I was doing, and I'm sorry, I'm not. Can I just talk, or do I have to talk as if I were talking to?
Just talk.
Okay.
Like we always talk when I talk to you.
All right. Well, I really have to say this because it struck me as it was about time to dial, because of the Peter Just Still connection on your website.
Right.
Could I read you just a paragraph? I'll leave out the rest of it, but a paragraph from a small work that we have here in Peterborough. Peter then began, this was after Seth Conklin had helped Peter in 1851, Peter Still.
Right.
He then went to Syracuse, where he was able to raise $125. From there, he traveled to Peterborough and spent a night in the plain and quiet home of Garrett Smith, who gave him a letter of introduction and a generous sum to further his cause. Eventually, $5,000 was paid to B. McMernan, the owner of Peter's family, and on December 21, 1854, Peter Still was reunited with his wife, Lavinia, his sons, Peter and Levin, and his daughter, Catherine, in Cincinnati, Ohio.
Wow.
Did you know that Peter had been to Peterborough?
No, I didn't. I didn't know that.
Well, I'll send you the piece from which that is from. It struck me as I was about to dial, and I thought, I think there's a connection here, so I have to do that. What we have going on in Peterborough is that we have purchased all of the estate of Garrett Smith as of 2007 and put it together for public so that we can begin to tell the story. to the public of what happened there, the story of Gerrit Smith and the story of the African Americans who came through Peterborough and stayed in Peterborough. The Gerrit Smith estate at this time consists of a building called a lodge, which is now the visitor center, a barn, the carriage barn, from which many people traveled on the way to Canada, or on the way to Oswego to take boats to Canada, and a laundry that was for the estate. And this is a large barn in which the washing was done and the hanging of clothes was done and so on. And that was operated by Harriet Russell, who was purchased from freedom by Gerrit and Ann Smith in the 1840s and brought to Peterborough with her father, her husband, and three children, and provided a home here to begin with and work for the members of the family, and she managed that laundry. On August 6th, two of Harriet's great-grandsons will invite to Peterborough African Americans who have roots in Peterborough, and they're identifying 26 families to reenact or recreate Emancipation Days, which was a very popular holiday held by the African Americans in Peterborough in the 1920s and the 1930s. And this is very important to the healing of our community, and of course very important to the heritage and to the future. So we're very pleased about that happening.
Could you go back and explain the Emancipation celebration? You said, when did it start?
It started, of course, and I'm not the historian on this, but Emancipation Days was celebrated in the Caribbean and in other sites on the
days they were emancipated.
Right, of the English Emancipation, actually. And why, we can't really, we don't really know how many years and how it got started in Peterborough, but in the 1920s and 1930s, either at the last week in July or the first week in August, there was a large celebration, and people, almost everyone dressed in white. There were there was a parade to the cemetery to lay wreaths. There was food and drink and sermons and so on. So that what happens in this August is going to replicate that, and we hope it continues and grows in Peterborough. We're excited about that. We open our season officially on Gerrit Smith's birthday, which is March 6th, with a calling together the stewards. Those are the docents or the volunteers for the Gerrit Smith estate, and Norman K. Dan, the author of the first biography of Gerrit Smith in over eight decades. He is usually the main speaker and speaks about Gerrit in some kind of way that's new to people, and also reviews those points that we want our docents to learn about Gerrit Smith. And then we also bring out other parts of the history, not only of the Underground Railroad, but of the other relationships that this family had. And I should have mentioned when I was talking about what had happened on the camp, on the estate, is that the land office, Garrett's office, in which he spent many, many hours, most of his life, of his adult life in that land office, that was built in 1804, and it is has been rehabilitated so that it has the same kinds of windows that it would have had in 1804, and the same bricks on the floor that were there, and so on. The mansion in which Gerrit lived, unfortunately, burned in 1936, so we don't have that to help tell the story. But in May, exhibitions provided through the New York State Heritage Underground Railroad Project were installed, so we have exhibition signage, pictures, and so on to help tell the story of Gerrit Smith and African Americans.
Can you describe some of the visitors that come through Peterborough tourists?
Sure. I already mentioned Harriet Tubman.
No, I mean current tourists, you know, when people come through the today or, you know,
in the present. Yes, people coming today. We have the public come, students come. On June 11th this year, we had 135 students come for a Living History of Civil War weekend, because our big educational and fundraising weekend is the second weekend in June, and we just held our 18th annual Civil War weekend, which is the tie between Gerrit Smith and John Brown. So our living history, we have from 15 to 20 different stations, and small groups of youngsters, when the drum rolls or when the bugle plays, move from station to station and have time with Abraham Lincoln or General Lee or General Grant, and they go to a Civil War medical tent and they learn how to make hardtack, and they speak with children, and they have drills and so on. So this is our fifth year, and it's been most successful. A few weeks ago, we had about 100 eighth graders come and have eight different stations around the village to learn the history of Peterborough, as well as at our Civil War weekend, we usually have about 2,000 people come and attend.
Wonderful. Now, what other attractions, historical attractions, are near Peterborough?
The Oneida Community Mansion House, John Humphrey Noyes and his Utopian project there. North of us is the Chitnango Landing Boat Canal Museum, an old section of the Erie Canal, one of the older sections and the longest section in New York State, is just 8 miles north of us. And then we have state parks here. Chitnango has falls and so on. This is all within our county. We also are the place in which, in our county, in a small town in 1808, commercial hop growing was introduced from Massachusetts. Commercial hop growing was introduced in New York State, and that was the first agricultural crop in the area.
I'm a little lost.
Hops were the preservative piece for beer, and they're now what gives it the bitter. It's that bitter aftertaste in beer, but at one time it was the preservative, so it was a great crop for farmers to raise, and we have the most standing barns that process the hops in the Northeast, if not the whole East, actually. But also from Peterborough, besides the Boomer history, Gerrit Smith's son, Green Smith, erected a three-story bird museum and was an early ornithologist. And upon his early death, collection, this large collection of not only birds, but nests and eggs and so on, went to Cornell and Harvard and Colgate. And last year we had some of that collection come back to us to show that. So then Gerrit Smith's grandson, Gerrit Smith Miller, is credited with importing the first registered Holstein Friesian cattle. And, of course, Holstein Friesians are the black and white cattle which are everywhere in the dairy states. And that's a large contribution to agricultural history in not only New York State but in our country.
Can I ask you a question? I learned recently about different ways of protesting the abolitionist use in the Underground Railroad. Could you talk about, you know, the non-slave made goods that abolitionists produced to counteract the slave industry?
Norm, are you online?
Yeah.
Would you answer that?
I couldn't tell what the question was. I'm sorry.
Okay.
I was asking Dot about non-slave made goods, which were made and produced to counteract, let's say, cotton or tobacco.
Right.
Do you know anything about if Peterborough was involved with making silk instead of cotton?
Madison County had a large attempt to raise silkworms for silk, which was unsuccessful. So, Madison County was not a manufacturing area. At the same time, there are many pieces written on the use of sweets other than cane sugar. And actually, when we have our dinners for our events here in Peterborough, we do not use cane sugar to replicate what the Smith family did in the 19th century.
So these people were so conscientious of fighting slavery that they refused to buy certain goods.
Yeah,
did you
was
say
a
that more?
A boycott of
right.
slave-produced products.
Right. Could you go into depth about these boycotts?
Well, they tried to not use any slave-produced products in the home. It didn't really work very well because not enough people would go along with that in the North. The idea was to cripple slavery economically by making no market for the products, but it just didn't spread wide enough. The Smith family did it. Starting in the mid-1830s, the Smith family stayed away from slave-produced cotton and sugar and rice for many years, but not many families did that.
Now, when these boycotts failed, I know you guys know a little bit about John Brown because he's from that area. Could you give the audience the sentiment of John Brown, his frustration with these nonviolent tactics?
Yeah, he was pretty frustrated with it all. He was an action person and didn't want to support anything, even in politics or moral suasion. But he didn't come on the scene until as a anti-slavery person until the 1840s, mid-1840s. He consecrated his life to destruction of slavery in 1837. But he didn't really do much about it until the 1840s and, of course, in the 1850s in Kansas.
All right. That mentioned the Secret Six.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is a good time to talk about them.
Go, Norm.
Well, what about them?
Who are they, and how are they connected to John Brown?
Well, they were supporters of Brown's movement to go into the South to encourage slaves to free themselves and help them North. The idea behind the Secret Six was monetary. Brown was looking for monetary support for his efforts and recruited these six people, five from the Boston area and one from Peterborough, and most of the money, however, came from Smith.
Wow. And the group, can you talk about the diversity?
Oh my, they were educators, ministers, some military-oriented folks. Smith, of course, was a peace man, and they came together on the idea of supporting violence through Brown to try to destabilize the institution of slavery.
And this all happened wasn't this a counteract against the Bleeding Kansas?
I don't know what you mean. A counteraction against Bleeding Kansas?
Didn't that happen first with the Missouri Compromise?
I'm not following you yet.
Okay. Well, we'll just skip that question and I'll rephrase it later. Now, let's mention to the audience while we have them on the line, again, while we're here tonight, we're here to promote the grant, the campaign for this grant.
Yes, thank you. May I t- tell the website?
Yes, please. The floor is yours.
Okay. It's, of course, www.refresheverything. Write it right out. refresheverything.com/NAHOFM. That's Nahoff Museum.
And what does that acronym stand for?
National Abolition Hall of Fame and Museum. So it's refresheverything.com/NAHOFM. And when you go online on that website, you will find that one of the that our campaign is in the $250,000 category, and you will see a button to vote. When you press that button to vote, and then you sign in, the first time it takes a few minutes longer. After you sign in, please vote. We know that some people are not voting that second time or pressing that button, and the vote isn't counting. So we're begging people to help us out with this. We had such a great start, and we'd like to have an even greater ending, and we only have about one more week. We have until June 30th to raise ourselves up to number one or two rank in order to get the $250,000 for the elevator and the museum at the Smithfield Community Center for the National Abolition Hall of Fame.
Wonderful. Norm, you came in on our conversation pretty late. This is a good time for you to introduce yourself.
Name is Norman Dan. I'm former professor from the State University of New York at Morrisville. I'm now retired. I have authored three books on the abolition movement, one on the Underground Railroad as it relates to Peterborough, a biography of Gerrit Smith, and a history of the anti-slavery movement with emphasis on the tactics used by Gerrit Smith when he comes on the scene.
Okay, where can we purchase your books?
Logcabinbooks.com.
One more time?
Logcabinbooks.com.
Okay, and the spelling of your name?
NORMANDANN.
Great. All right. How did you get involved in, you know, what made you so interested in Mr. Gerrit Smith in Peterborough?
Dorothy Wilsey. I met Wilsey in the early 1990s, and she piqued my interest in the history around Peterborough. I had always had an interest in racism as a topic, and I taught sociology, and with some emphasis on racism.
I have to interrupt you. Where did this interest in racism stem from? When did you find out you had this interest?
When I was in college, just started reading books on black-white issues and racism.
Nothing prompt you? No epiphany?
No.
So just one day you walked up to the library and pulled out a book?
No, I just... The interest developed when I was taking social science courses in college.
Oh, okay. All right. Go ahead. So you had interest in racism.
Right.
And you met Miss Wilsey in the 1990s.
Right. And the statement was made by Dorothy and by Milton Sernett, who is a friend of ours who also studies the abolition movement, that someone needed to do a new biography on Gerrit Smith. And when I looked into it and read the information that was available on him already and the biographies that had been written, I realized they were correct. So I started research on it.
Okay. If you wanted to convince someone to read about Gerrit Smith, can you give us three things that you think would pique someone's interest the way Dorothy piqued yours?
Three things?
Yeah.
You mean something about the man himself? Or?
Yes. Anything that you think would strike a chord with our listeners and mm-hmm. would compel them to vote tonight.
I see. Well, the reform era that he lived in was a tremendously exciting kind of era to study. And when one realizes what happened in Peterborough, that this was a center for activity in the reform movement, and not just for abolition, for women's rights, for temperance and other movements. The importance of Smith and his work appears huge. And centering the National Abolition Hall of Fame and Museum in Peterborough recognizes the importance of that history and the man. He was probably the most powerful abolitionist in the country because of his liberal ideas and his money, his willingness to disperse that money. He was very philanthropic and didn't want the money himself. He wanted to give it to people who were in some way oppressed.
Wow. That's breathtaking to know that these people exist. And what's even more impressive is that you're here talking about it all these years later. It's a wonderful story. I hope you guys reach your goal. Anything else you'd like to talk? I know we talked about several events that are taking place and have recently taken place in Peterborough. Do you want to recap that?
Well, this October 22nd, we will be having a recreation of the first meeting of the New York State Anti-Slavery Society meeting that was held here October 22nd, 1835. And the next day, we will be commemorating the inductees from 2007, Lewis Tappan and Theodore Dwight Weld.
Can I interrupt? Who is Lewis Tappan?
Norm.
Tappan was a businessman in New York City. He and his brother Arthur, together in business, and they were very wealthy and very willing to support the abolition movement with their money.
Okay. What is his connection to the L'Amistad?
He was one of the legal persons involved in the defense of the Amistad captives.
Okay. By the way, I have a YouTube video. I have two channels, The Gist of Freedom on YouTube and Leslie, L-E-S-L-E-Y, the letter N, the letter U, Tube. I have a clip from a documentary about the L'Amistad, and it talks about Lewis Tappan and his involvement. So for our listeners, please visit that site, and you'll get a real flavor of why this museum is very important. So you're going to have a recreation or some sort of event which will commemorate Lewis Tappan or Tappan?
Tappan,
Okay, what day is that?
That is October 23rd.
Okay. You can continue.
And then also we will be commemorating Theodore Dwight Weld. And actually, some of his family members will be here as well, because it was Theodore's brother, Ezra, who was a daguerreotypist in Casanova, who took the famous daguerreotype of the Casanova Convention, which was a protest against the Fugitive Slave Law of 1850. And we will also be commemorating that in Casanova in August. And then the next day, October 24th, we will be holding a ribbon cutting of our sites that have their new exhibits for the Underground Railroad Trail in New York State. And dignitaries and the public will be here to celebrate.
Okay. We're winding down to our last 5 minutes. Professor, would you be so kind to touch on the Fugitive Slave Law of 1850? So the people will understand why you guys are having a special event around this law.
Yeah, it was an effort to strengthen the Fugitive Slave Law from 1793 and was part of a larger law. It was only a small part of a large compromise law, which involved the admission of California to the nation as a free state in 1850. And in order to compromise the South on that, the legislators allowed a strengthening of the fugitive slave law, which would encourage Northerners to participate in the capture of fugitive slaves and return them to the South. And in fact, it even required them to do so by being deputized by federal marshals with penalties against Northern citizens if they didn't agree to help. And it infuriated Northern citizens to the point where it became a recruitment tool for the abolition movement.
Mm, a backlash. Do you see any parallels of what's going on today in Arizona in immigration today?
Well, in some ways, I guess the Ku Klux Klan has experienced a tremendous spurt in growth in the last few years because of illegal immigration. That's the big focus of the increase. And, of course, that was an middle 1860s organization that started up right after the 13th Amendment was passed, freeing slaves, with the effort to curtail that freedom. So there are some similarities there.
Okay. All right. Now, also, we have a list on your website of the inductees. Would you be so kind to just go over the list and give us a little bio of each person that the museum inducted?
Okay. Norm, how about if I say the name and you do the history?
I'll try.
Okay. Our first inductees, March 5th, 2005, were Frederick Douglass.
Yeah, an escaped slave, became a journalist, moved from the Boston area to Rochester, New York in 1847, met Gerrit Smith, became involved in the political effort to end slavery, and was supported by Smith monetarily for his publishing, and came around to agreeing with Smith in his philosophy of politics and slavery.
William Lloyd Garrison.
Publisher of The Liberator in Boston, leader of the Boston clique of abolitionists, emphasis on moral suasion as the technique for ending slavery, and would never change in his three decades of abolition movement activities. He always supported the moral suasion activity, whereas other abolitionists switched tactics.
Lucretia Mott.
An early anti-slavery supporter, female, very unusual that they would be allowed to speak in public or act politically, and she did.
Wendell Phillips.
A Boston Brahmin.
Norm, I'm sorry, I'm out of order. After Lucretia Mott was Gerrit Smith.
Well,
can you handle that?
We know Gerrit now.
Don't need to add too much more there, do we?
Okay. Harriet Tubman.
Underground Railroad conductor, escaped from slavery in Maryland in the early 1840s, and returned as many as 10 or 11 times into the South to free other slaves, as many as possibly 70. She came through Peterborough several times. She liked it in Peterborough. Talked about Gerrit Smith as being her friend. Of course, there was money here. She knew if she got to Peterborough, the rest of the trip to Canada was a cinch because of the money and the transportation from Peterborough.
And in 2007, the inductees were John Brown.
Well, the Harper's Ferry is what comes to mind immediately. He destabilized the institution of slavery by inciting fear in the South that the abolitionists were coming and were going to be radical enough to use violence to end the institution of slavery.
Lydia Mariah Child.
A journalist and abolitionist in the Boston area, another female who married an abolitionist, David Child, and together they worked for the moral suasion aspect of
abolition movement in support of William Lloyd Garrison?
Wendell Phillips.
That's the Boston Brahmin, a friend of William Lloyd Garrison. He consecrated his life to the abolition of slavery in 1837 after the murder of Elijah Lovejoy in Alton, Illinois, and spent a lot of his upper-class level money on the movement and was recognized as a superb orator.
Sojourner Truth.
The slave that became a speaker on the national circuit, and you had
she was a visitor to Peterborough. Also, she named herself, and she became a women's rights activist. I don't know when, Norm.
Well, that's not too important. Some things they have to come to your museum and learn.
That's right.
All right, so you're not going to give them everything.
Thank you, Leslie, for letting us off the hook on that.
Okay.
There is one quote that I would like to end with, and that is Henry Highland Garnett wrote to Frederick Douglass, and Frederick Douglass put this quote on the front of his publication, his paper. And Henry Highland Garnett said, "There are two places in the world where slaveholders cannot go."
Come.
Come. Would you like to guess where that is, Leslie?
No. Peterborough.
Heaven and Peterborough.
Wow.
So we tend to call our project Heaven and Peterborough because it speaks to how special Peterborough is and was.
Okay. Can you give the web address to where everyone should vote?
Yes. www.refresheverything.com/NAHOFM. Please vote.
Yes, we need your vote. And Professor, the name of your books and your website?
The titles of the books?
Yes.
The first one is When We Get to Heaven, Runaway Slaves on the Road to Peterborough.
We can purchase these books?
You can purchase them through logcabinbooks.com.
All right. Well, thank you very, very much for joining us tonight. That is always a pleasure talking to you, and I'm glad you introduced me and the audience to Professor Don, right?
Dan, D-A-N-N.
D-A-N-N. Thank you again. And please keep us posted on your success and let us know when you win. We'd like to celebrate with you.
Okay, Leslie. Thank you very much.
Okay. Good night.
Appreciate it. Okay, bye-bye.